Chapter 8. When they arrive back to what looks like the beginnings of another war, Jiangcheng has to wonder why he expected anything else, really. Ajia is standing shoulder to shoulder with Lan Xichen and Nie Huaisang, all three of them glaring at Jing Guangshan. Or, well, actually, none of them are glaring. They all have perfectly polite expressions on their faces. But it's the type of polite they all get when what they actually want to do is glare. He hates that he knows that. Not about Ajia, obviously, but the others. He can't believe there's a universe where he's able to pick up on Lan Xichen's irritation. He knows he's right, too. Because when Lan Wangji had looked at his brother, his face had gone perfectly smooth. And then Wei Wuxian had winced. His people, the Lan and the Nie, appear to be on one side, while the Jin and the minor clans are on the other, standing behind Jing Guangshan. The Jin might have the benefit of being more well-rested, having mostly not fought in the war, but surely Jing Guangshan isn't foolish enough to stand against all of them now, ignoring that Wei Wuxian could wipe them all out if they needed him to. Those just aren't good odds. He notices that Jing Guangyao, rather than standing next to his father, is next to Jin Xixun, with Mian Mian and Jin Xixuan behind them. They're all off to the side and clearly doing their best not to get involved. Which is interesting. "What's going on?" Nie Mingtui barks. If Jiangcheng didn't know better, it would be impossible to tell that a strong wind could knock him over right now. Well, going by the way Nie Huaisang and Jing Guangyao's eyes narrow in exactly the same way at exactly the same time, not impossible, but pretty close. "What did you do?" Jing Guangshan demands of Wei Wuxian. The way that he, Ajia, Lan Wangji, Nie Mingtui, Nie Huaisang, and Lan Xichen all attempt to step in front of Wei Wuxian at the same time would be comical in another situation. Nie Mingtui steps forward, chin lifted in defiance.
"What I asked him to do. He did a favor for the Nie clan that had some unfortunate side effects."
"Unfortunate? Surely you can't be this naive," he demands. "That level of resentful energy must have come from the Yin Iron."
"Actually, not that it's any of your business, but it came from the Nie Mausoleum,"
Nie Mingtui says coldly.
"We'd had an issue with some restless spirits there, and Wei Wuxian was kind enough to assist us in their removal."
"Restless spirits did that to you then?" Jing Guangshan asks.
"Ah, right. All four of them are covered in varying levels of blood. Most of it Nie Mingtui's."
"Yes," Nie Mingtui says unflinchingly. "If there's nothing else we can help you with, Clan Leader Jin."
Jing Guangshan's eyes narrow, briefly flicking over all of them and resting on Wei Wuxian slightly longer than Jiangcheng likes, before he smiles and says,
"No, of course not, Nie Mingtui. I'm just glad that you're all right and there's nothing to be concerned over."
The way everyone tries to subtly step in between him and Jing Guangshan to prevent his fist from finding its place in Jing Guangshan's jaw is funny, even considering the circumstances. Their disciples all disperse, eyeing each other warily, but their strange group all end up in medical, even though only two of them are injured, along with the addition of Nie Zongchui. The medic is Alan, whose lips barely twitch in disapproval over Nie Mingtui's wounds as he heals them. A young medic would have had several cutting and loud remarks about the whole thing. Jiangcheng finds the silent judgment to be more off-putting.
"Well," Nie Zongchui asks, "did it work?"
"Perfectly," Wei Wuxian says smugly, even as Ajia is rubbing a healing salve on the wounds on his arm and shoulder. They're small and narrow. Nie Mingtui must have taken every one of the blows meant for Wei Wuxian while also fighting the blades off.
"Did what work?" Nie Huaisang demands, tapping his fan impatiently against his hand. "What was all this about?"
"Later,"
Nie Ming Tui says, but he's smiling and his voice is warm, which Jiang Cheng is pretty sure is what actually keeps Nie Huaisong from throwing a fit in front of all of them. The lawn healer steps back, bowing quickly before leaving the room. Nie Ming Tui frowns and picks up Baxia, holding the blade in both hands for a moment, and running his hands over the intricate hilt before swallowing and holding it out to Wei Wuxian. Here. Hmm? He frowns as he takes the blade before his face clears. Ah, right. I'll channel the energy out of this one, too. Although, you're still going to need a new blade, he says apologetically. Once it's used to channel resentful energy, it's really no good for anything else. Nie Ming Tui shakes his head.
Wei Wuxian, no, that's not. Well, if that's what you want, that's fine, but you can channel resentful energy and it doesn't hurt you.
Lan Wangji's eyes narrow and Wei Wuxian reaches out to pat his shoulder, seemingly without thinking about it. Mostly, yes, as long as I concentrate and, do some other stuff.
Baxia uses resentful energy,
Nie Ming Tui says.
Won't you wield her, Wei Wuxian? You're the only one who can, really.
Everyone is silent. This is huge. Swords are personal. So personal. And that Nie Ming Tui would even allow Wei Wuxian, this is a very big deal. Even if he can't wield it himself anymore. Baxia is also the only blade that Wei Wuxian will be able to wield. One made for use with a golden core, but corrupted for years with resentful energy. One that's been twisted and forced to work with resentful energy, but hasn't yet turned truly malevolent, like the blades in the mausoleum. It's not something that Jiang Cheng would have ever asked him, would ever ask of anybody. But now that Nie Ming Tui has offered, he can't stop himself from saying, please take it. Now everyone is looking at him, and no one knows that this is Wei Wuxian's only chance, that if he doesn't wield Baxia, then he'll never wield another cultivation weapon again. His brother doesn't need the power, but Jiang Cheng thinks he needs the familiarity, thinks that this is one more thing to protect him. Not just that it's Nie Ming Tui's blade that he's using, but that he uses any blade at all will at least allay some of the fears surrounding him. I missed flying with you. Wei Wuxian swallows, looking down at the blade in his hands. Then he gets down on his knees in front of Nie Ming Tui, head bowed, and says, I would be honored, elder brother. Finally, things are starting to look up. He allows everyone a few moments to gain control of their emotions, and for Wei Wuxian to push himself to his feet again, before he turns to Lan Zicheng and says,
We should work out a marriage treaty before we go.
He hadn't known that Wei Wuxian could turn that color. Jiang Cheng! I thought this wasn't the right time to speak of marriage,
Nie Huaisong says dryly.
Jiang Yan Li made that quite clear.
Arranging a new marriage during a mourning period is against custom, he says with an entirely straight face. But seeing as Wei Wuxian and Lan Wangji have been courting since we were 16, it's only prudent to finalize a marriage treaty as quickly as possible before they go disgracing both our sects by kissing everywhere. He pauses. Also, the next time we'll be together to discuss will be the crowd hunt at Lan Ling, and I'd rather not do that there.
Lan Zicheng is the closest to outright grinning that Jiang Cheng has ever seen. I suppose we should discuss Wei Wuxian's move to Gusu after the wedding. He hadn't known Lan Zicheng was a comedian. He means to say, over his dead body. But then Ajia is at his side, smiling perfectly pleasantly, in a way that makes Jiang Cheng want to hide. Lan Zicheng, of course that is impossible. Asian cannot leave the Jiang clan. Lan Wangji will love Lotus Pier, I'm sure.
Lan Zicheng's smile doesn't budge. If anything, it gets wider.
It seems we have several terms to negotiate.
Lan Cheng! Wei Wuxian hisses. Are you just going to let this happen?
Lan Wangji's face is even more perfectly blank than usual.
You look good in red, Wei Ying.
Wei Wuxian is actually struck speechless for a moment. Jiang Cheng is tempted to give Lan Wangji a high five.
Wei Wuxian licks his lips and asks, "Are you sure that this is what you want, Lan Chan?" "Are you sure I'm what you want?" he means. Lan Wangji puts his hands behind his back, says, "Yes." Wei Wuxian smiles, clearly seeing something in his expressionless face that the rest of them don't, but Jiang Cheng can still see the uncertainty in Wei Wuxian's eyes. He hadn't exactly been expecting a grand speech or anything. This is Lan Wangji, after all. But if he's going to be giving his brother up to him, he's going to need to put in a little more effort than that. He leans forward to poke Lan Wangji in the shoulder, hard enough to bruise, and says, "He doesn't come with a return policy. If he did, I would have gotten rid of him years ago." Wei Wuxian rolls his eyes, mouth partway open to snap back at him, when Lan Wangji says, "Good." And his jaw clicks shut. "Good?" Wei Wuxian repeats. Lan Wangji's mouth almost looks like a smile, and he steps closer to Wei Wuxian. He lifts Wei Wuxian's hand to his face, pressing it against his cheek, so the tips of Wei Wuxian's fingers barely brush against his forehead ribbon. Lan Xichun's face flushes, and he looks to the ceiling, while Nie Mingchui raises an eyebrow, and Nie Huaisang makes a big show of hiding his face behind his fan. Ajia just smiles and catches his eye, and he knows the only reason she's not laughing is because she doesn't want to ruin the mood. "Good," Lan Wangji says again, and this time even Jiang Cheng can hear the warmth in his tone. Ajia may not want to ruin the mood, but he definitely does. "I'm pretty sure there's a Lan sect rule against this." His sister whacks him in the side. "But really, he doesn't deserve to suffer like this."
"You just said we are betrothed,"
Lan Wangji says, somehow not embarrassed at all, when even Wei Wuxian's cheeks are stained red.
"This is permissible between those who are intended for one another."
Wei Wuxian looks at Lan Wangji from under his eyelashes, something Jiang Cheng could have gone his whole life without seeing. And now Lan Wangji is blushing. "Gross," he says, shoving at Lan Xichun until he lets himself be herded outside. "You're both disgusting and we're leaving. Come on, big brother, we have a marriage treaty to negotiate."
"Shouldn't you get some sleep first?"
Lan Xichun asks, but continues to let Jiang Cheng manhandle him out of the tent. Ajia follows them out, and Jiang Cheng doesn't miss the betrayed looks that Nie sent them at leaving them behind. But that's not his problem. "You really think I'm going to be able to sleep after seeing that? Do you want me to have nightmares?" Lan Xichun rolls his eyes. He leaves them long enough for Jiang Cheng to change, and then comes back with the Lan disciple who had seen Wei Wuxian after he'd woken up and then gone to tell Lan Wangji. Lan Biyu is a senior disciple that's several decades older than all of them. Although, of course, that's impossible to know by looking at her face. Traditionally speaking, Lan Wangji and Wei Wuxian should be here, sitting silently in the corner and not looking at each other. But Wei Wuxian is terrible at being silent, and all they've done since they were 16 is look at each other. So it's probably for the best that they're not here now. Besides, it's not as if this is going to be a traditional marriage. In his time, Wei Wuxian had been treated as a full member of the Lan through his supposed marriage to Lan Wangji. He knows there wasn't a formal ceremony, because if there had been, Wei Wuxian would have invited him. He knows that now. And Jiang Cheng had thrown a fit anytime anyone had suggested that Wei Wuxian actually belonged to the Jiang clan. That's not happening again. He didn't go through all this trouble to get his brother back just to lose him to Lan Wangji's eyelashes.
"Asian is precious to us," Ajia says. "He is a treasured and irreplaceable member of the Jiang clan."
"Lan Wangji is the second Jade of Lan and in direct line for the position of clan head," Lan Xichun says. "Of course it is impossible for him to leave the Lan."
"Of course," Ajia agrees.
Jiang Cheng doesn't laugh at the way Lan Xichun and Lan Biyu each raise a skeptical eyebrow in unison, but it's a near thing.
Neither of us are willing to give up our brothers, nor are our brothers willing to give up each other, even if we ask them to. So we won't. I'm willing to offer Lan Wangji a place in the Jiang clan without requiring him to renounce his place in the Lan, as long as you are willing to do the same for Wei Wuxian. Lan Biyu's other eyebrow raises, so they're both high on her forehead.
That is an unusual arrangement, Clan Leader Lan. You're truly comfortable letting an outsider into your clan with divided loyalty? What if the Lan and Jiang have a disagreement?
He won't be an outsider. He'll be my brother's husband, Jiang Cheng points out, then grudgingly admits. For anyone less honorable than Lan Wangji, I wouldn't be willing to make such an exception.
For anyone less honorable than Wei Wuxian, neither would we,
Lan Xichen says, easily ignoring the way Lan Biyu's hands clench into fists. Jiang Cheng's chest flares with warmth at the show of loyalty to his brother.
They'll never be happy if we make them choose.
Ajia leans forward.
So we won't. The Lan and Jiang clan have been allies for generations, despite our differences. There's no reason to believe such an alliance will break down now. Should such disagreements or misunderstandings arise, surely this union will only be a benefit. Lan Wangji and ASEAN will have a deep understanding of both clans' cultures and perspectives.
Lan Xichen hums, but Jiang Cheng knows that he'll agree. Knows that Lan Xichen loves his little brother too much to do anything else. Especially now, in this time, when the Lan brothers understand and trust Wei Wuxian so much more than they had before.
They'll have permanent residences with both of us, and spend summers in Yunmeng and winters in Gusu. Spring will be up to their discretion.
Jiang Cheng nods. Their most important festival takes place in summer, while for the Lan, it's in winter. He'd been planning to suggest the same. Any children they have will have to choose a primary clan when they're older, and then any clan they have will belong to that clan. We don't want to accidentally make a third clan here. Now they're all surprised, but Jiang Cheng doesn't budge. Both Lan Wangji and Wei Wuxian are good parents. Are parents who loved their child in a simple, all-encompassing way Jiang Cheng had never experienced from his own parents. Even if circumstances change and Wen Yuan isn't brought into their lives, he doubts they'll remain childless forever.
That is an acceptable solution,
Lan Biyu says, and she seems less tense than she had been before. Possibly some of her reluctance had been more about the potential political disaster with this arrangement, and less about prejudice against Wei Wuxian. They stay in that tent a long time, drafting language that they have to mostly make up since there's hardly a precedent for this type of thing. And there are so many ifs and possibilities that they need to agree on solutions for now, for times where either Lan or Jiang tradition will dictate. The closest to an argument they get is when Ajia and Lan Biyu politely and scarily disagree about the wedding particulars. He and Lan Xichen drink their tea and stay out of it. He knows it's important, that it says a lot about status and relationships and power, and he'd fought viciously about those things when he'd arranged Ajia's marriage to Jin Xixuan, and he will again. But the whole point of this is that Lan Wangji and Wei Wuxian are entering this marriage as equals, so he just can't bring himself to care about it. Ajia and Lan Biyu grudgingly decide on the wedding taking place in Cloud Recesses, with Lan Wangji and Wei Wuxian spending the remainder of the season and the next at Lotus Pier, which means they're having a spring wedding. Well, they're having a spring wedding assuming the crowd hunt at Lan Ling doesn't go how it did last time. Jiang Cheng hopes it doesn't, but he knows his brother, perhaps now better than he ever has. If Wei Wuxian believes that the only way to save the Wen is to go rogue and hide them in the burial mounds, then that's what he'll do. No matter the strings holding him here. No matter him and Ajia and Lan Wangji. Jiang Cheng is just hoping that this time he doesn't have to. That after the Nie and Lan and Jiang have had a chance to rest and recover from the war, they'll be able to stand against the Jin and all the unacceptable things the clan pretends it doesn't do. That they pretend Jingguang Shan doesn't do.
If Jiang Cheng has to murder Jing Guangshan himself to see it, well, he's done worse things for worse reasons. At least he'll enjoy this one. He and Lan Xichen finally sign the engagement contract with a not inconsiderable amount of relief. Usually these things are formulaic enough that names just have to be added. But considering the high status and the irregularity of their arrangement, Jiang Cheng is impressed that it only took a day. They leave for Lotus Pier tomorrow, and he's already dreaming of his bed when they all step outside, each of them holding a copy of the signed contract. Wei Wuxian and Lan Wangji are waiting for them. Wei Wuxian stops in the middle of pacing, his hair mostly out of his ponytail like he's been yanking at it, and Lan Wangji smoothly rises out of his meditative pose to stand next to him. Oops. Maybe he should have let them sit in on it. Well? Wei Wuxian asks, looking nervously from him to Ajia.
You are both too vulnerable to your clan to lose, Lan Xichen says, soft around his eyes and the corners of his mouth. Instead of asking one of you to give up your claim to your clan, we've opted to each accept the other into our clan. We've all lost enough in this war, after all.
You mean I get to stay? Wei Wuxian asks. He's looking right at Jiang Cheng, hope tentatively breaking out over his face. And Jiang Cheng can't even bring himself to make fun of him for thinking they'd ever give him up, even to the Lan. Ajia's marriage into another clan had been arranged when they were children, but Wei Wuxian was always supposed to stay. He's the one that Jiang Cheng was supposed to be able to keep. Of course you're staying. We just got you back. Ajia bows to Lan Wangji, who Jiang Cheng thinks might be equally relieved. But he still can't really tell.
We look forward to you joining the Jiang, Lan Wangji.
Lan Wangji returns the bow, and that's definitely a smile that he's not doing a very good job of hiding. To his surprise, Lan Biyu bows to Wei Wuxian.
The Lan sect will be honored to welcome Wei Wuxian, she says, and she doesn't even sound like she's lying.
He flushes, quickly returning her bow with less grace than he would normally. Thank you. Me too. I mean, I'll be honored to join. He pulls a face.
Does this mean I have to memorize all those rules?
You already have,
Lan Wangji points out. It's been nearly 20 years, but Jiang Cheng can still remember Wei Wuxian goading Wen Chao by reciting the Lan sect rules. All the parts of him that hadn't been horrified and furious had been impressed.
Actually, I think this means that we have to teach Lan Wangji to break the rules, he says.
The moment of despair that flashes over Lan Wangji's face makes Lan Xichen laugh out loud while Ajia hides her giggles behind her sleeve. They leave early enough the next morning that only the Nie brothers drag themselves out of bed to see them off. Nie Huaisang is only half awake as he hides his yawns behind his fan and leans against his elder brother's side. Jiang Cheng told them both they didn't need to bother, but he's still smiling as they trade formal bows. And then Nie Mingchui gives both of them quick, gruff hugs and even goes so far as to kiss Ajia's cheek.
You should have done that where Jin Zixuan could see you,
Nie Huaisang says, now draped over Wei Wuxian.
Huaisang!
Nie Mingchui barks while Ajia flushes. Jiang Cheng might have gotten offended at that before, but they're sworn brothers, and Baxia is slung across Wei Wuxian's back, a sign of the bond between their sects almost as good as the engagement contract between them and the Lan. So he just rolls his eyes and says,
save that for where Madame Jin can see it, actually, if you're trying to be helpful. Maybe if they feel as if they have competition, the negotiations will go smoother.
Mian Mian won't fall for that,
Ajia warns. And they haven't discussed what Ajia wants, if she plans to accept a proposal. But they haven't had to. As much as Wei Wuxian grumbles about Jin Xichuan not being worthy of their sister, and of course he's right, it's still clear to both of them that Ajia wants him anyway. And what Ajia wants
she gets.
Considering Madame Jean won't take any Jean seriously who doesn't have the right pedigree, I don't think we have to be worried about that, he says. Besides, I think she's on our side. Nie Huaisang gives elaborately clumsy bows to all of them. That has to take more effort than it would have taken to just bow at them properly. Wei Wuxian yanks out Nie Huaisang's hair tie like they're still children, and then they're off. Jiang Cheng and Wei Wuxian are riding next to each other at the front, while Ajia rides in the middle of the procession. And they haven't gotten more than a couple of miles when he hears, Wei Ying. He raises a hand to put them all to a stop, and Lan Wangqi descends on his sword, stepping down from it in front of them. Lan Chan, what are you doing here? Is something wrong? Wei Wuxian gets off his horse and throws the reins to Jiang Cheng. Lan Wangqi shakes his head, opens his mouth, then closes it and holds out his hand.
I just... Here, for your flute.
It's a dangling blue rabbit charm. Jiang Cheng notices for the first time that the red lotus charm is missing from Cheng Qing. He doesn't get the chance to get properly huffy about it, because it only takes him another moment to see it attached to Lan Wangji's sword, the little charm out of place on the elaborate scabbard, but tied to it anyway. Wei Wuxian had given his charm to Lan Wangji to remember him by while they were apart, and now Lan Wangji is returning the favor. He is going to throw up.
A bunny? He demands.
Mm-hmm. Wei Wuxian hums happily, taking the charm and affixing it to the end of Chen Qing. Thank you, Lan Chan. He steps closer, but Lan Wangqi coughs, a flush across the bridge of his nose. Wei Wuxian grins, and then looks to them, twirling his finger in clear instruction. There's a ripple of laughter, but all the disciples dutifully turn around.
Seriously? Jiang Cheng demands, crossing his arms. I know there's rules against this.
Well, if you want to see me kissing Lan Chan, Wei Wuxian starts.
Ugh, shut up,
he complains, but turns his back to them along with all the rest. He barely has a chance to impatiently tap his foot, and he doesn't hear anything when Wei Wuxian says, Okay, you can look now. So they must not do anything too traumatizing. Although the besotted look on his brother's face is traumatizing all on its own. The flush has spread across Lan Wangqi's face, but he bows to Jiang Cheng before stepping onto his sword and flying back towards the unclean realm. So there's that, at least. He waits until they're moving again to ask, Why a bunny? Wei Wuxian smiles, and Jiang Cheng knows he's going to lie before he even opens his mouth. It's because when we're married, we're going to... Jiang Cheng shoves him off his horse. They've been back at Lotus Pier for almost 2 weeks. Wei Wuxian still has nightmares and still drinks too much. It's not like it was before, though. He always drank too much, even when they were in cloud recesses as teenagers. And it's rare these days for him to be truly drunk. Unlike the first time around, when Jiang Cheng's not sure how often he ever saw his brother sober. But this is better. This is different. Wei Wuxian is here in a way he hadn't been the last time around, when he was constantly sneaking away to town to drink and never there when Jiang Cheng needed him. Jiang Cheng doesn't bother trying to get Wei Wuxian to come with him to the council meetings this time around, except for every once in a while, just to remind people that he's there. That's what Ajie is for, after all. Instead, he does what he wishes he could have done last time, assigns Wei Wuxian the work he's actually good at, rather than trying to force him into doing things that make him uncomfortable, which means recruiting and training. As the most senior and accomplished disciple of the Jiang sect, Wei Wuxian had already had a heavy hand in training the disciples, but Jiang Cheng puts him in charge of all of it now.
He had to do it himself last time, and he thinks maybe this time around he'd like to be able to get some actual sleep.
I'll teach the sword cultivation classes if need be, or you can assign them to someone else if you want, Jung Chung tells him over breakfast, while Wei Wuxian looks at him as if he's insane. But you're gonna need to figure out how to work with Ba Xia, and there's no reason not to use teaching the disciples to do that. Besides, even if you don't want to use your sword, it's not like you still can't teach them the forms and the moves. If you need someone to demonstrate something that you can't do exactly the same, there are plenty of senior disciples for you to pick from. Wei Wuxian is just staring at him. Ajia uses his distraction to move more food onto his plate. He's getting better at eating meat, but still prefers not to. He eats fish easily enough, which is much easier to come by in Lotus Pier than it had been in the Unclean Realm.
Everything?
Not everything yourself. I'm going to want you to recruit through Yunmeng too. It should be easier now that the war's over, he adds. He's not going to begrudge parents who wouldn't let their children go to Lotus Pier when the chance of them returning had been so precarious. You can delegate, but it's your curriculum and you're in charge of it.
Ajia pours everyone more tea.
You should teach seals yourself, Asian, at least. No one else can do it better. I'll continue teaching history if you like.
You should teach the advanced and basic archery yourself, too, Jung Chung adds. The intermediate classes can probably manage to muddle along without you. Maybe.
He tries not to feel too smug about all of this, and fails. Wei Wuxian is worried about damaging Jung Chung's reputation or getting in his way as clan head, which is why he won't go to any of the meetings that Jung Chung wishes he would. But this is different. Jung Chung is putting the education and training of their disciples in Wei Wuxian's hands. He's putting the clan in Wei Wuxian's hands, even more surely than if he were standing next to him at every meeting and interaction. There will be no way to mistake Wei Wuxian's place within the Jiang clan now.
You don't have to do this, Wei Wuxian says quietly.
Jung Chung raises an eyebrow. Do you know anyone better, more qualified? You taught classes before, senior brother Wei. It's one of the reasons their people had been slow to turn on him, this time and last. Jung Chung had been too busy to do more than teach the occasional class in their youth, instead learning about how to run a clan from his parents. Ajia hadn't been strong enough to teach anything physical, so the bulk of it had fallen to Wei Wuxian, who'd been an aide in many of the classes that he wasn't teaching himself, as had been his duty as the first disciple. Most of the classes Wei Wuxian had taught before had been the beginner ones, teaching their disciples the building blocks of their cultivation. He's always been good with kids, even when he was little more than a kid himself. Our people get the best, don't they? That's you. Seeing his brother cry because he's happy is a nice change. Jung Chung is so focused that he doesn't notice Ajia until she stands next to him, pressing a cup of steaming tea into his hands. It's early enough that they're pretty much the only ones awake.
How's it going?
Wei Wuxian moves Ba Xia like he would Suibian, realizes his mistake partway through, and the cultivation energy collapses around him. Jiang Cheng snorts. His brother whirls around to point Ba Xia at him threateningly, sees Ajia, then drops the blade to jut out his bottom lip.
Shijie, Jiang Cheng is being mean to me.
He hasn't sliced him open with it yet, so there's that, he says generously. Wei Wuxian drops the pout to scowl.
I don't know how all the Nie managed to use such wide blades.
They're not usually quite as wide as Ba Xia, but Wei Wuxian has a point. The wider the blade, the more energy is channeled through it. Suibian had been a slimmer sword than average, which is something that Jiang Cheng is pretty sure his mother insisted on, and it had caused plenty of people to underestimate his brother. Because Wei Wuxian had never wielded his sword quite like anyone else, and now he's trying to wield Ba Xia like he wielded Suibian. I think you're doing it wrong, he says,
Wei Wuxian opens his mouth to snap at him, and he shakes his head. No, listen, I'm serious. You always overloaded Suibian, forcing a comparatively large amount of energy to come out of a slim blade, which made it more concentrated, so it was stronger and purer than you could have produced normally with the same effort. He thinks his mother had meant it as a handicap, but Wei Wuxian had turned it into a strength instead. Then again, it's not like many other people could have pulled it off, since few had a golden core as strong as his brother's, which is now his. It's possible he's going to have to reassess his own training schedule. So? Wei Wuxian asks, but Jiang Cheng can tell by his frown that he's already thinking it through. So, you're using resentful energy, which you obviously have more than enough of to do the same, even with such a wide blade, but instead of being precise, it's too much, especially because you're still doing the Jiang style. If you overpower a blade this wide while trying to be fast and precise, it's all gonna fall apart. That's too much energy. He means to continue, but Wei Wuxian's eyes light up and he says, Wait, yeah, no, okay. And then he goes back into a starting position. He slides the blade in a wide arc, a move he never would have made with Suibian, and resentful energy sweeps out in a wave. Instead of breaking part way, Wei Wuxian flicks the blade and brings it back behind him, curving the arc down and then up in a move that looks more Lan than Jiang or Nie. The energy follows in thick ribbons, creating a barrier in one move that would have taken him several with Suibian. Achia claps, and Jiang Cheng takes a sip of his tea to hide his smile. Of course, 2 seconds after figuring it out, he's inventing new, stronger, and more efficient moves. I think I'm going to have to create a new sword style, he mutters, staring at the blade. Wang Yan will be thrilled, he says dryly. And he's not joking. She's been helping Wei Wuxian with the sword classes and loving it. Wei Wuxian looks up at him, his grin so bright and warm that Jiang Cheng can't help but return it. Thank you. You'd have figured it out eventually, he scoffs, wishing there was something to hide behind now besides the empty teacup in his hand. Maybe, he says, still with that warm smile. He turns to Ajia because he thinks that might be safer, but she's looking at him the same way, so he huffs and heads back to his room. Achia handles a lot of the reports and paperwork, but he still has to sign off on most things, so there's a great big stack of busy work waiting for him in his office. Except then Wei Wuxian's arm is slung across his shoulders, Baxia once more at his back, and Achia comes up on his other side, tugging at his arm in the opposite direction. You're going the wrong way, Acheng. We haven't had breakfast yet. His siblings keep him between them as they discuss their recruitment strategy, and Jiang Cheng keeps his head ducked so they can't see the look on his face. This time, a year after the Wen attack on Lotus Pier, he doesn't let Wei Wuxian sit at the back like his brother had insisted on doing last time. Instead, he says that Wei Wuxian will be by his side where he's always wanted him. And it only takes Achia giving Wei Wuxian a stern look to quell his protests. Wei Wuxian is his brother, his senior brother Wei, and the head instructor for their disciples. It's improper for him to be anywhere else, after all. That night, Achia comes to him, a bundle of cloth in her arms. She looks nervous, which isn't good. Do you think, will you come with me? Of course, he says, even though he's not totally sure what he's agreeing to. He follows Achia to their brother's room, and she knocks before stepping inside. There's several candles burning, and Wei Wuxian rises out of his meditative pose. Because that's something he does now, every night. He's not happy about it, but apparently it's one of the things that helps him be able to channel the resentful energy without it either killing him or driving him mad. It's good that he's doing it, but that doesn't make it any less strange to see. Something wrong? He asks, looking between them. Jiang Cheng shrugs and tilts his head towards Achia. She takes a deep breath, smiles, and holds out the bundle of cloth. You don't have to wear them if you don't want to. But you can, and I'd like it if you did. Wei Wuxian takes the cloth and shakes it out. His eyes go wide, and Jiang Cheng is pretty sure his brother's too focused on the clothes to hear his surprised intake of breath. It's a set of robes in the exact style their brother favors. But instead of black, it's dark purple, and instead of red, it's a deep plum. It's Jiang colors, which his brother has never worn more than a hint of, and even that was rare. Jiang Cheng hadn't wanted to push in either timeline. It's such a small thing, after all, in the grand scheme of things, hardly worth yelling about. For the ceremony, at least, Atia says, twisting her hands together anxiously. But you could wear them more, or all the time. They're your colors, Asian. No one's going to yell at you for wearing them. Jiang Cheng blinks. Why would anyone yell at him for wearing them? Neither of them say anything, and the answer comes to him anyway, a moment later. His mother had been a strong, powerful woman who loved him, but he's getting tired of finding new reasons to be disappointed in her, especially when she's dead and he can't do anything about it. That's ridiculous. All our disciples wear our colors, and you are our brother besides. What are you if not Jiang? She didn't want me to forget I was Wei is all, he says quietly. Yeah, right. And wasn't your father part of this clan? You are your parents' son. You should be proud of that. But you're the Jiang senior disciple and our brother, and you should be proud of that too. He hadn't meant to shout that last part, and he realizes his hands are clenched into fists and his chest is heaving, and this is all probably a bit of an overreaction. But he's just so fed up with every new reason he finds for why Wei Wuxian thought that he hadn't belonged with them. That it hadn't been all his fault isn't a relief like he'd thought it'd be. I am, he says earnestly. Of course I am, Jiang Cheng. Then act like it, he snaps, knowing that's not fair, and he's being cruel when he doesn't have to be. But Wei Wuxian is Jiang, and his brother is supposed to stay. How many different ways does he need to tell his brother that he belongs with them before he starts believing them? But instead of getting hurt or angry, Wei Wuxian is smiling at him. Okay, Jiang Cheng, I will. Wei Wuxian is wearing the robes when he and Ajia stand next to him, as he takes his oath as clan head in front of their people. And it feels right. It feels like he's finally gotten something right in all this. Weeks turn into months. Wei Wuxian seems to acquire a whole new wardrobe seemingly overnight, something that he knows is Ajia's doing. And he always dresses in Jiang colors now. Even when he wears his old black robes, he'll wear a purple underrobe, and it's good, it's enough, that even if someone knew nothing else about him, they'd look at Wei Wuxian and know that he belongs to the Jiang clan. Their numbers double, then nearly triple. Jiang Cheng is doing way less of the work than he had the last time around, but between their clan not being decimated in the final battle and their recruits, their numbers have increased enough that he's just as busy. Wei Wuxian has roped Ajia into helping him recruit, and it really just drives home that he's not the people person out of his siblings, which, of course, he'd already known. Their new disciples and people come from further than Yunmeng, everything they own on their back, looking for a new start. Those are when, Jiang Cheng says with a calm he doesn't feel, looking at the new batch of recruits his siblings have brought in. It's no one he recognizes, but he knows he's right. They glance at each other. Ajia says, not for sure. We can't prove that they are. The war tore a lot of people apart. Everyone is taking in displaced people. They're not. Maybe into their land, but not into their sect. But the Jiang have never done anything quite like anyone else, and there's no reason for them to start now. It takes strength and loyalty to be a Jiang disciple.
These Wen could be dangerous, as dangerous as Jing Guangshan had warned them about. But there aren't many people that can fool both Wei Wuxian and Ajie. The only one he can think of is Jing Guangyao, and he doubts any of these people are quite up to that level of underhanded and manipulative. He can cause a fuss. Technically, they should be turning them over to the Jin, but that's the last thing he wants to do. We never had this conversation. He sighs and makes a note to make sure none of them accompany them to the crowd hunt to the Jin, because there's no way that'll end well. Ajie kisses his cheek and Wei Wuxian claps him on the arm. He goes and hides in his office because all these new disciples and new people in the pier have generated an awful lot of paperwork, after all. Wei Wuxian and Wang Yan are successfully creating a whole new sword style that the rest of the disciples have adopted with mixed results. Wei Wuxian now wields Baxia almost as well as he had Sui Bian, but the new style relies on equal parts strength and grace. The disciples with a decent knowledge of dancing seem to be doing better with it, but it's hard to know for sure since Wei Wuxian is only letting the advanced disciples attempt to incorporate the new style so as not to muddle the way for the disciples who are still attempting to master the Jiang style. Wei Wuxian trades letters with Lan Wangji with about as much regularity as they can manage, reading each of them with an eagerness that actually makes him look his age. Jiang Cheng hopes it's enough. Wei Wuxian has a clear, undeniable place in their clan. He knows his siblings love him, and he's engaged to Lan Wangji. It has to be enough to keep him here, surely. It has to be enough for Wei Wuxian to choose his family over his duty, for him to realize that he has a duty to his family. Jiang Cheng doesn't know what he'll do if it isn't. This time, it's not Jin Sixuan who shows up at Lotus Pier to deliver the formal invitation to the crowd hunt. He and Wei Wuxian are in the middle of demonstrating sword forms to the beginner class in the courtyard, the children following their movements with admirable precision. Jiang Cheng finds he enjoys teaching a lot more when it's something he only occasionally does at his brother's request, rather than every day. Mian Mian! Wei Wuxian says excitedly, dropping his form to hurry over to the entrance. Jiang Cheng blinks, but sure enough, Mian Mian is there, the disciple who'd escorted her here hanging back as Wei Wuxian lifts her up into a tight hug and spins her around. She laughs and punches him in the shoulder when he puts her down, her face bright and open and friendly. Wei Wuxian, you look good and not half dead like I last saw you. I can't believe the rumors about Baxia are true. How do you manage to wield that thing? Wei Wuxian smirks. Mian Mian, I'm an engaged man. We really shouldn't be talking about how I handle my sword. She rolls her eyes and smacks him with her own sword. But by the twist of her mouth, she's amused. Jiang Cheng dismisses the class with a quick gesture as he walks over to them. The older kids end up having to be pulled away by the younger, who are less curious than they are eager to head to lunch early. It's good to see you, Mian Mian, but how did you get in without waiting for permission? He's speaking to Mian Mian, but glaring at the disciple who blanches in return. He doesn't have a problem with Mian Mian being let in, but he doesn't want any other Jin running about Lotus Pier without his knowledge. Sect leader Jiang, she says, going into a formal bow. She pulls out an invitation from her sleeve and hands it to him. Jiang Yan Li gave this to me before we left. He glances at it and stops glaring at the disciple, who breathes a sigh of relief and starts edging away. It's a formal invitation to visit Lotus Pier at Mian Mian's convenience with his sister's seal. Ah, he says. Well, come on, let's go find her. I don't want to interrupt you if you're busy, she says, but doesn't shrug off the arm that Wei Wuxian swings over her shoulder. Nonsense, he says cheerfully. Jiang Cheng already sent the class away anyway. They'd be heartbroken if we made them come back. Jiang Cheng rolls his eyes, but leads them to one of the side halls, briefly pausing to ask one of the servants to get his sister and have a tea service sent there.
He'd made Jin Sichuan sit in the main hall with all of them far apart and formal, but that's not right from Yan Yan. Instead, he brings them all to sit at the same table in a room that's meant for guests, but is smaller and more intimate. Achia doesn't run, but she does arrive walking more quickly than normal. And she and Mian Mian share a hug and clutch at each other's arms, talking excitedly to one another while the tea is served. I do have an official reason for being here, Mian Mian admits, getting to her feet to present Jiang Cheng with the invitation. The Jin clan officially invites the Jiang clan to the crowd hunt. You came all the way here just for that? Wei Wuxian presses, even as he plucks the invitation from Jiang Cheng's hands to read it himself. Mian Mian shakes her head and addresses Ajia, even as she keeps her body facing Jiang Cheng. Madam Jin would like you to come and watch the crowd hunt as well. She asked Jin Sichuan to come and extend the invitation himself. Ajia flinches and Wei Wuxian snaps. And he refused? No, Mian Mian says, eyes wide. He asked me to come instead because he would very much like Jiang Yanli to accept the invitation, and he thought that she'd be more likely to agree if I was the one asking. He wants me to accept? Ajia asks quietly, twisting her hands together in her lap. Mian Mian nods, abandoning her formal position to sit next to Ajia and take her hands in her own. She doesn't seem anything but sincere when she says, Very much. Jin Sichuan is imperfect, but he's a good man. I wouldn't be so close to him if he wasn't. Mian Mian's friendship is perhaps the best character reference Jin Sichuan has, or the only one, really. Achia swallows and turns to look at him and Wei Wuxian. It's your choice, Achia, he says softly. Last time he and Wei Wuxian had looked at each other in despair, both of them equally devastated by Achia's acceptance. But he knows that Achia loves him and that her leaving gets him Jin Liying. It doesn't hurt that this time around Jin Sichuan has shown himself not to be a complete asshole. Wei Wuxian doesn't have that knowledge, but he presses his lips together and gives one firm, short nod. Whatever you want, Shuqia. Something eases from her face, then, and there's a smile at the corner of her lips when she tells Mian Mian, I'll gladly accept Madame Jin's invitation. Mian Mian beams and hugs her again, and Jiang Cheng tries not to let any of the emotions he's feeling show on his face. The crowd hunt had been the beginning of the end. Ajia accepting Jin Sichuan's proposal and Wei Wuxian breaking away from the clan to protect the Wen. Things that on their own hadn't been devastating, but had led to much worse. Last time he left Lotus Pier with both his siblings and returned with neither of them. This time will be different. It has to be.